Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio.
BangTheBook.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to the third of four 2015 NFL season preview shows talking about all the team win totals. My name is Adam Burke. Joining me, as always, BangTheBook.com writer, personality, and expert NFL aficionado, Mr. Cole Ryan. Cole, how's it going today, buddy?
Excellent, sir. Thank you for the introduction, as always. Very excited to talk about the NFL, and it's unfortunate that it doesn't start tomorrow because, as you know, we're football junkies, so I'm excited to talk about win totals and where these teams may be headed in the future.
Yeah, quite a bit to get to on this show. We'll talk about the NFC East and the NFC North. A couple of plugs before we get into things here. My MLB betting podcast, The Bettors Box, you can hear that every Monday, Thursday at bangthebook.com. And Cole, I believe you know, some people may have heard you on your NBA podcast.
They might. It's called Betting the Buckets. It's relatively quick. Sometimes it gets longer when I go on a rant, but I break down betting on basketball. And of course, the NBA finals are getting closer and closer. And so, I do that 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and it's great stuff. So stop on by and check it out.
It absolutely is. Down to the final four now. So a lot of exciting basketball stuff to talk about, you know, and there have been a lot of things going on in these series, a lot of injuries that have, you know, had subsequent line moves and all kinds of things. So it's been a tough time of the year to bet on basketball. So if you're struggling with it, or even if you're not, make sure that you're tuning in to Betting the Buckets. Cole, not really any big stories to talk about, I guess, right now, other than the teams that we're going to discuss on the show here. We'll start with the Dallas Cowboys, who had quite a lot of transition this offseason.
They have. And, you know, the Dallas Cowboys are always a team that are going to get a lot of attention for any kind of moves they make. But it seemed like this year they were making moves that garnered more headlines, I guess. Of course, they tagged Des Bryant, which he wasn't happy about, and they got him. But the biggest story, at least from my opinion, is probably DeMarco Murray leaving, because this shows that this team is heading in a different direction, at least from a management standpoint. It used to be back in the day, Jerry Jones would play as much as possible to keep everybody. It didn't matter who it was or where they were in their contract, but not this year. They let him walk, and not only walk, but they let him walk to a competitor. And now they're relying on a backfield that basically has Darren McFadden, Joseph Randle, and Lance Dunbar. Now, normally, you would hang your head with that combination of running backs, but the one thing that the Cowboys do have is a very good offensive line, which actually got better when they went out and grabbed another premier prospect, who I believe in Lael Collins, I'm sure I botched that, who went undrafted. Of course, most people know because he was involved in a murder investigation, but he was really touted as one of the best offensive linemen in the draft. And now they get him, they make that line much, much stronger. They may actually be able to run with guys like McFadden. Of course, his health is always a concern. And Randle, and keep this team competitive with some of the moves they made. So to me, looking at the Cowboys, I like the moves they're making because it doesn't seem like such a knee-jerk reaction like it has been in the past where they would just throw money at the highest and biggest name player. They're actually building this team.
Yeah, looking at it, their number opened 9.5, basically across the market. No line right now at BetOnline. They took that one down for whatever reason. But, you know, when a line does come back up, make sure they're shopping around for it. And that's really what I'm curious to find out about this Cowboys team is, you know, how good was DeMarco Murray and how much of it can be attributed to the offensive line? Because as we talked about last year, you know, it was Dallas's ability to run the football that not only kept Jason Garrett in his job, but, you know, propelled the team to the postseason. Because Garrett coming off of a couple of 8 and 8 years, you know, Jerry Jones was sort of on the fence about getting rid of him, wound up not doing that, you know, and it wound up working out for him. Now, that being said, you know, if this is a team that's going to miss DeMarco Murray, they're going to put more pressure right back on Tony Romo. And you know, Romo gets a raw deal from a lot of people. I really don't think he's as bad of a quarterback as people make him out to be. But if he doesn't have that offensive balance from the running game, it could be a very long season for the Cowboys.
It could be, but I'll tell you what. I think they will because that offensive line is just that good. My concern was defense, of course. You know, Justin Durant, he leaves. Bruce Carter also leaves. They really needed some help on defense. Of course, they go out and send Greg Hardy, which, of course, he then gets suspended for pretty much the bulk of the season. And then they, you know, they do well in the draft, I thought, as well, by picking up guys. I know they took a chance, basically, with Randy Gregory, with everything that was going on with them. But considering where they got him, I don't think it was such a bad pick. They bolstered the offensive line. Chaz Green, I like what they're doing with this team. Now, the problem when you bet on the Cowboys is you almost have to be worried and concerned because they're a public team. And what I mean by that is they have a lot of fans, so they get a lot of backing. So these numbers can often be skewed if you're not careful one way or the other.
Yeah, that's very true. And, you know, this number – potentially opened a little bit inflated because of that. I think normally you would see more of a 9 with this team, but you get the 9.5 at the under -140. You know, seems like they're kind of begging for some over money there. And I understand that point of view. I'm not really high on the Cowboys for this year. Yes, their offensive line is very strong, you know, and if Collins is able to come out there and be a starter from day one, like some people thought, you're looking at a team that's going to have, if Collins would have gone in the draft, they would have 4 first-round picks from 2011 to 2015 on this offensive line. Now, you know, it's a hypothetical because Collins wasn't taken in the draft, but he was supposed to be a first-rounder. I think we can probably say, you know, that he would have been.
Sure.
You know, there's tons of talent on this group, but, you know, they lose offensive coordinator Bill Callahan. He goes over to the Washington Redskins, and Callahan's an offensive line guru. And I think that may hurt this team a little bit. It may cause them to regress in the running game, and that's going to put more pressure on Romo. And, you know, Romo was able to stay upright more last year because their rushing attacks stopped other teams from blitzing. He was only sacked 29 times last year, and 34-9 touchdown interception ratio. I think more turnovers are coming. I think more negative plays are coming. And also, as we'll talk about here later in the show, I think the NFC East is going to be improved as a whole this season.
Well, yeah, I can't argue with there. There's one team I don't care for in the NFC East, but I won't spoil it ahead. As far as the Cowboys are concerned, I think this number is right on, although I think they're going to be the cream of the crop. Look, when you have a good offensive line and you have a talented offensive line, I do think they're not in a good spot by losing Callahan as coach, but I don't think that's going to really cause them to be that bad because they're a good team. They're good talent. Now, the NFL schedule makers didn't help them out. I see a stretch in the Cowboys schedule where they play 4 out of 5 games on the road at Tampa Bay, at Miami, home against Carolina before going to Washington and to Green Bay. That's a tough stretch right before the end of the season that could cause some problems for them. But overall, I think they're going to go over this total. I'm going to take them over. I think they're going to be one of the better teams in the East.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the schedule, and, you know, we do that with all the teams here. It was a good time to bring it up because looking at it, you know, I mean, they're a pick at New Orleans. They're a pick at the Giants. They're a pick at home against New England. You know, a lot of their games, of course, hovering around key numbers, as most of these look-ahead lines do. You know, and looking at that, you know, it seems like the Cowboys are getting a little bit of respect from the odds makers on a game-by-game basis. Maybe not as much in the full picture win total, but, you know, a pick at home against New England, a pick at New Orleans. New Orleans obviously has all kinds of problems, but, you know, for them to be lined like that against these teams that, you know, have these public perceptions, these teams that are good basically year in and year out. It was a down year for the Saints last year, of course, but, you know, to have these kinds of numbers popping up, I mean, only a 1.5-point dog at home against Seattle, you know, there's some respect here in these numbers.
I think that's the telling sign. Like I said, I agree with you in the fact that this division as a whole, and to me, almost the NFC as a whole, it seems like it's getting better as I start to do some of my previews and look at teams. But really, the NFC as a whole is getting better, and I think it's really evening out the playing field and maybe making these things a little bit closer as far as game-by-game basis than we've seen before. And so, for me, I look at the intangibles. You know, I love the trenches, and that's where the Cowboys are doing well. Their defense needed an overhaul in the linebacker area. They did that. I trust Romo, especially if he's going to be healthy, which I think he will with that line, and that's why I'll go over.
Well, look at the New York Giants here. It was obviously a very tough season for the Giants last year. But, you know, they showed a lot of admirable qualities. They never quit on Tom Coughlin last year, and that showed a lot to me. Looking at their win total for this season, 8 at BetOnline, over minus 125. Not really a whole lot of movement on this one. You know, but the Giants with a new defensive coordinator and Steve Spagnuolo, you really have to like that hire because this team's defense has been very bad over the last couple of years.
Oh, you got to love that hire. Not only that, but Spags is familiar. He's been here before. And you're right. They don't give up. A well-coached team. It looked as though Coughlin was going to be done. They're given one more run. And to me, they've addressed the issues they needed to address. They needed to address the protection of Eli Manning, and they really needed to address the defense. Like you said, that defense was, I mean, if it wasn't for the Bears, they probably were one of the worst in the league. But I like some of the signings they made. They bring in Shane Vereen. To me, Eli Manning really needed that security blanket, throw it out of the backfield when things are getting tough. And that adds to protection. That basically gives him another offensive lineman by giving him that piece. And, of course, they also did well in the draft. You know, they're never flashy in the draft. The Giants, they never go out there and make what I'll consider the big splash or seemingly the big splash, but I really think they did well. I mean, Ereck Flowers, he's a rough edge blocker. He's going to move bodies off the ball, and that's what they really need, a lot of physical toughness up front. You know what I mean? It allows the Giants also to reshuffle that off the line. It makes them more flexible up front. I like what they did from a standpoint as well, although you're not going to see any names that really – jump off the page to you. To me, Landon Collins was another good draft pick that could play right away and get this team headed in the right direction. I'm still concerned about that defense. I like what Spags bringing in, but I really want to see that defense play a few games before I can buy into the big blue right now.
Yeah, if you look at them statistically last year, you know, a lot of things that really stand out. This was a 6-10 team that was only minus 20 in point differential. So their expected win-loss more basically between 7-9 and 8-8. So they got a little bit unfortunate in some of their games. They turned the ball over at least once in 15 of their 16 games. Despite all the turnovers they had, they were 13th in points and 10th in yards gained. So this is a team that has a lot of offensive talent, so long as Eli is not turning the football over. And as you said, the offensive line, a big point of emphasis for them. They bring in Ereck Flowers. He'll help, especially with run blocking, because the Giants only averaged 3.3 yards per carry last year. Well, I should say Andre Williams averaged 3.3 yards per carry last year. And, that's going to help them. And as you talked about, they bring in a guy like Vereen. You know, that's an extension of the running game. It's going to keep some pressure off of Eli Manning. You know, we've seen how important it is to have backs that can catch out of the backfield. I mean, it's prolonged Tom Brady's career. You know, it's always been a big deal for Peyton Manning. You know, now Eli has that guy with a sure set of hands that he can rely on, and that's huge. I mean, that's going to limit turnovers. That's going to create, you know, third and short situations for this offense. There are a lot of really good things coming out of the Giants offseason here.
I agree. And like I said, it's not flashy. Look, we know they have a great front office. They really do. And truth be told, it seems like the Giant teams where people expect the less of them is when they do their best. It seems like that's when they play their best kind of football. They never give up. They're always in it. They can start off, the season 0-5, and they still play tough. And to me, that's a sign of great coaching. And that great coaching only got better with some of the additions they've made. They've definitely made some improvements. The offensive line is going to be one of them. Defense is going to be running, but you're right. Are they going to be able to have a running game? Are they going to be able to offset Eli Manning? Because let's face it, Eli Manning, when under pressure, he looked pretty bad last year. To me, it's when, people, you got to remember, it was only a couple of years ago people were saying Eli's elite. Last year, they were like, wow, turnover machine, who is this guy? So I just need to see a lot of this team. I really like what they're doing. I really think they're headed in a positive direction, but I'm not ready to buy it just yet.
Yeah, I'm really on the fence about this team. For one thing, I'm not a huge fan of the number sitting at 8. You know, I mean, you could do a lot worse. And of course, the over was minus 140 at Westgate Superbook when it opened. So, that's come down a tiny bit there, at least at the offshore market. And, I think what people need to realize is that when we talk about a change at defensive coordinator or, adding some playmakers on one side of the ball or the other, that doesn't just help that unit. That helps the whole team. Because if they have a better defense, they're going to do better in field position. They're going to force some turnovers, give Eli short fields. They're going to hold teams to 3 as opposed to giving up 7. All these things are important. I mean, it truly does have a trickle-down effect in the NFL, where if you greatly improve one side of the football, it's going to improve your whole football team. And we see it time and time again, year after year. There's some team that goes from you know, 6-10 type of thing to winning 10 games or 11 games because they make the necessary improvements that they need to, the Giants could be that team. I mean, you're looking at a schedule where they play at Dallas in week one. That's a very tough game. But, you know, their next four games, Atlanta at home, Washington at home, at Buffalo, host San Francisco. This is a team that could very well be 4-1 going into their week six Monday nighter against Philadelphia.
Yeah, could be 4-1 there. But then, look, it's a nightmare stretch after that. We're 3-4 on the road to include at Philly and at the Saints. Even if you throw in the at Buccaneers not being so bad, then they got to host the Patriots. Now, the good news is they have a bye week late in the season, which is something I always like to look for. And then after that, think about it. You could arguably say, depending on who you think is going to be good or not good heading into this year, that there's only one game maybe left that could be tough for them, maybe two outside of, you know, the Eagles. So they could have a good end of the season, which seems like something that this team does quite often. But I really want to emphasize the point you brought up, that looking at even assistant coaches and line coaches and other moves that teams have made are very, very important outside of the headline splashes that you see, because those are the ones that could really make all the difference. That's why you and I wanted to have these podcasts so early in the season, because it's important to get started early. You know, people are like, wow, a little too early for football, isn't it? No, it's never too early, as funny as that sounds, because there's always changes, and those changes will always affect the team and therefore the market.
Well, I think you and I are going to agree that this number is probably right on point at 8, but if you had to take a side on the win total, which one would you take?
Yeah, if I had to take a side, I would want to say I'd want to take the over. I think that 8 is right on. I think a push isn't too far of a reach. Again, I like how the end of the schedule wraps up. And like you said, think about it, they could get 4 right out of the gate with Falcons, Redskins, and Bills and 49ers. So it's kind of hard to go under, but I'll go over, but just barely. Give me like 9.
Yeah, I think I'm going to take the flip side and go under. I think they go 8-8, though. So, you know, that's kind of my cop-out move. But when you look at the juice on this number, I really don't want to be paying 125 or higher for this team to find a way to go 9-7. I think they have some depth problems, and that seems to be an issue for them year after year, where they wind up with some offensive line injuries, and you know, they're signing guys off the practice squad, and you know, if the 10,000th fan inside the gate gets to start at right tackle. You know, they've had all kinds of problems like that over the last couple of years. Eli Manning, 63% completion percentage last year. His two previous seasons were both below 60%. So if there's some regression in that completion percentage, it's going to hurt this offense. Give me the under, albeit barely, and mostly it's just because I think that the under is the value side given the juice that you're paying.
No, I agree. Like I said, I think it's dead on. I would even hate to – the only reason I don't go push like you is because we just want to make a pick, because we know people want picks and pushes are boring. But I could very, very easily see an 8-win team out of New York this year.
Well, let's talk about the Philadelphia Eagles. You want to talk about a team that had a busy offseason. The Eagles, certainly one of them. They bring in Sam Bradford. I don't know. Hopefully he's got a couple of bionic knees at this point, so we can see what he's able to do. They bring in DeMarco Murray, bring in Ryan Matthews, bring in Kiko Alonso and ship out LeSean McCoy. They brought in Byron Maxwell and Walter Thurman. I mean, this is a team that made some significant moves in the offseason. Their win total sitting at 9.5 with the under at -125. That's a bit of a head-scratcher to me.
Oh, yeah. I thought so, too, especially with the juice on the under. But, hey, let's talk about that offseason. Huge, huge moves. I mean, there was probably no other team that had more news, moves, made more headlines than the Philadelphia Eagles and Chip Kelly. And, look, you have to give Chip Kelly credit, because it did not take him too long to get in the NFL to become the man. He's put himself in a position where he's going to make all the moves and nobody's going to question it. And the owner's buying in. Makes things very, very interesting, because it's not like this team was doing bad. This team was doing well. It's headed in a positive direction. And he basically decided to overhaul in a place that's not easy to overhaul teams, because, of course, Philadelphia fans will kill you. But right away, he's getting Sam Bradford by getting rid of Foles, who played well in the scheme at points before he got hurt, and they gave up a second-round pick for that. And then, of course, LeSean McCoy sent shockwaves through pretty much everywhere in the league. But as you know, I'm a big fan of Kiko Alonso. I don't think that's a bad move. And basically, by signing DeMarco Murray and even Ryan Matthews to a point, they kind of made people forgive him for that McCoy move. So all these moves and everything going in so many different directions, And people are still kind of high on the Eagles. People kind of just went, oh, that's Chip being Chip, and here we go, and we still got another good team. Don't forget, he's also brazen enough to go, hey, what about Tim Tebow? You know, and then in the draft, they were talking about trading up for Mariota. He doesn't. He kind of stands pat. He gets some people, especially on defense. He pretty much, with the exception of the first pick as a wide receiver, he spent the whole draft grabbing defense. You know, Eric Rowe, a corner out of Utah, and he's drafting linebacker Jordan Hicks out of Texas. And, I mean, the list goes on and on. I really think I like what he's doing from the standpoint that he's not apologizing to anybody, and he's willing to get the players that he wants to play in his system.
Yeah, this is a fascinating team to me. And, you know, I think if you're going to play this win total, you have to ask yourself, how much does Sam Bradford have to do? Because if you think Bradford has to be the guy, has to stay healthy for all 16 games, has to go out there and make plays, you know, then you're probably going to lean towards the under because, you know, recent history would suggest that he can't do that. But you look at the talent around him. You got DeMarco Murray, Ryan Matthews, Darren Sproles, Jordan Matthews, who's going to become a stud. He was a tremendous player at Vanderbilt. Nelson Agholor, who they pick up, you know, another good wide receiver option. So they've got downfield threats. They've got guys in the running game. They've got safety valves in the, you know, short passing game. But, you know, then you can also look at the defense. You know, the Eagles last year, 28 turnovers and 49 sacks, and they still gave up over 6,000 yards. So this is a team that gave up big plays all over the place. They bring in Maxwell and Thurman. That should help. You mentioned some of the draft picks that they made. You know, there's a whole lot of new things here. You got new toys for Chip Kelly. You've got a lot of transition. You have to wonder how quickly this thing comes together. They play three out of their first four on the road. Their home games in the first 6 weeks are Dallas, New Orleans, and the Giants. They're at Carolina before the bye, at Dallas after the bye. So this is a team that has to come together really quick. I mean, they're favored in all three of their first road games, at Atlanta, at the Jets, at Washington. No big surprises there. But, you know, when you look at the back half of the schedule, this is a team that has a small margin for error before the bye in their first seven games, and that's with a whole lot of new moving parts and a brand-new starting quarterback.
Yeah, and it sounds like we're heading the right direction, or the same direction here when it comes to our prediction and how they'll finish out. Look, it's really, really simple the way I look at it, is that Chip Kelly wanted guys that buy into his system and fit into his system. Do I believe Bradford fits that mold? Yes, but can you bank on a guy to be healthy who's pretty much never been healthy his entire career? He's in a different system. They can rely on the run a little bit more. They have the pieces to, like you said, the offensive weapons. The defense, you mentioned those numbers that were awful, but they're often, you know, a byproduct of that offense because the offense goes so quick and strikes so quickly. The defense really doesn't have as much time to recover, and that actually hurts them. That's why that draft and getting all that depth is only going to make this team better. But like you, too many moving pieces. I don't think they're ready to get better now. They're still going to be a team in the playoff hunt. They're still going to be a team on the cusp, but I'll take under that number. I don't want to eat up that heavy juice, but I'll do it in this case.
No, I'm sandbagging you. I'm going over with this team. I'm going over 9.5. I think this is your NFC East, division champion. I mean, this is a team that started 7-2 last year, and then they collapsed. You know, they played some pretty decent teams last year. They're going to play a tough schedule again this year. But, you know, I look at this team and all I see is the talent. And I think this team has a very, very high ceiling. You know, even if Bradford's not the guy, they still found a way last year to win 10 games with Nick Foles and Mark Sanchez. So, you know, it would probably fall on the shoulders of Sanchez if Bradford gets hurt. You know, the Eagles won 10 games in 2013 with relative unknown Nick Foles at the helm. Chip Kelly finds a way to get a lot out of this team. And I love the additions that they made in the secondary. They've got some big play guys back there now that can slow down opposing offenses. Give me over for the Eagles. And you know what? I think this is a team that wins 11 or 12 games this year.
Wow. You did sandbag me, and you did it well. Look, I'm not discounting anything that Chip Kelly's done. I think he has done an incredible job. And I really think when he gets players that buy into this system, it's fun for them to play football. And so they love going out there and doing it. But I'm not ready to bank on Sam Bradford. And I'm sure as hell not ready to bank on Mark Sanchez. Now, like you, I saw that he did well when he had a few shots out there, but I'm just not going to do it. I'll stay under, but good. Glad we're in two different positions. That's always good for the show.
Yeah, so am I. And, you know, it's kind of funny because I'll probably say, I don't know, somewhere around 145 times during the regular season that the NFL is a quarterback-driven league, and here I am taking the Eagles over, you know, with Sam Bradford. So we'll see. I mean, he's a guy that's got potential if he can stay in the lineup, and hopefully with all the weapons around him, you know, he'll be able to do that because he's going to have to shake off some rust too. I mean, this is a guy that really hasn't played in a while, and the Philadelphia offense is a lot about timing. So, you know, training camp is going to be very important for him. The preseason is going to be very important for him. You know, so I may walk back on that prediction once I see, you know, how things look on the field. But for now, the talent on that team is, you know, it speaks for itself. Teams with talent, you know, they have high upside, a lot of, you know, a lot of helium. And then there's the Washington Redskins, who are currently looking at a win total of 6, minus 115 on both sides. You teased a little bit earlier that you think that there's one team in the NFC East that is significantly lower than the rest. Since we haven't talked about them yet, it's obviously got to be the Redskins.
Obviously. 4-1 team a year ago, perhaps more importantly, 5-11 against the spread, which means they were a bad team and giving up big or getting big numbers as underdogs and still not covering, which means they weren't even playing close. I do like the fact that they go out and get a new general manager, and I like the fact that they're trying to build this team. You know, if you look at their draft, I mean, everywhere it's offensive guard and defensive ends, and I can get into it, everybody that they picked and what they've done. But they're not ready. They're not going anywhere. And who's going to be the quarterback? Is Gruden going to be able to fix Griffin? He's got horrible mechanics. He wasn't comfortable with the playbook. Already Deshaun Jackson's coming out and saying, hey, let's go back to the read option again, which, of course, is a run-heavy formula for those of you that don't know. But that, of course, is how RG3 got hurt. And so now what are you going to do? You're hoping that Gruden can mesh with RG3. You're hoping they can come out and play well. You're hoping this team can all of a sudden produce. I love turnaround stories in the NFL, and they're there to be had in certain divisions. This isn't one of them. If the Redskins win 3 games, I'm impressed.
Yeah, there's no point even waiting until the end to go with my pick on this team. I think this team is terrible. I think there's a chance that they're in the running for a top 3 pick. God help them if they take a quarterback. But, you know, this is a ship without a captain. And, you know, they were almost at the point where they were trying to fire Jay Gruden just a few games into the season last year. RG3 is toxic for any head coach that's coming in. You know, Kirk Cousins is not happy where he is now, sitting there behind Griffin. You know, there were been all kinds of trade rumors with him. I don't think he's an NFL starting quarterback. I think he's an elite backup, but I don't think he's a starter. Griffin's obviously proven that he's not going to be a starter. Redskins gave up 24 or more points in 11 out of 16 games last year. They were 1-10 in those 11 games. 9 of their 12 losses by double digits. This isn't a team where you can look at them statistically and go, well, there's some positive progression here. You know, they may get better in this area. They may get better in that area. I actually think this is a team that could get worse, like you said. You know, they're bad with field position. They're bad on special teams. Gave up 58 sacks. They don't generate negative plays. They did a good thing by getting rid of Jim Haslett and going with Joe Barry. You know, Joe Barry's a guy that's been around, a longtime linebacker coach in college in the NFL, but he doesn't have a whole lot to work with. This team in general doesn't have a whole lot to work with outside of Deshaun Jackson and Pierre Garçon. I hate the Redskins this year. They could very well be a 3-13 team for sure.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, the schedule is brutal. They end the game at Chicago in December. Then they host Buffalo before playing at Philadelphia, at Dallas. Just a tough stretch for a tough team. The only upside is that when they're making a lot of moves in the offseason, you didn't see them really break the bank and bring in overpriced veterans the way Snyder's done in the past. And so perhaps if you're a Redskins fan, you can cling on to the fact that it seems like they're headed in a positive direction as far as that's concerned.
Well, I think one of the other things about their schedule is that, you know, they draw the last place schedule, but they don't get Tennessee and Cleveland. They get St. Louis and Chicago. And, right. I mean, those are two improving teams. We'll talk about the Bears here when we talk about the AFC or the NFC North. But, you know, really the only teams that they have a very good shot against would be teams like the Jets, like Tampa Bay. Well, they go to the Meadowlands in a stretch of 3 out of 4 on the road. So they're a road dog at the Jets. And then they're a 4-point home favorite against Tampa Bay before the bye, but that's the only game that they're favored in. So you're asking this team to pick off a few upsets. I don't think it's going to happen. As you said, they close with 3 out of 4 on the road. By that time, they'll have probably quit on Jay Gruden anyway. So you know, who knows? This may be a team in the running for the first overall pick.
I wouldn't be surprised. And it would be good for this team because, again, I like what they're doing by bringing in new management, but until you see it, you can't back it, especially at the betting window. I don't think perhaps they'll be as bad against the spread. 5-11 is pretty rough, but I could see them being in the same ballpark. So to me, until you watch this team play and see what their strengths are, if any, they're a team to avoid at all costs, as far as I'm concerned.
Let's move over to the NFC North here, talk about the Bears and new head coach John Fox, offensive coordinator Adam Gase, tremendous defensive coordinator hire in Vic Fangio. This is a very, very good coaching staff now. It's just a matter of accumulating more talent on the team. They've got some, but the defense was brutal last year. Gave up 442 points, over 6,000 yards. Only one team allowed more touchdown passes than the Bears. They were terrible with field position. They allowed points on 44.6% of opponents' drives last season. So
unreal.
On one hand, you look at it and go, well, there's nowhere for this team to go but up. But on the other hand, you go, how long does it take them to go up?
Right. First of all, incredible number that you just brought up. That is a beautiful number. I agree with you. General Manager Ryan Pace bringing in, of course, Fox and the new coaching changes, and every one of them seemed like a hit. Every one of them seemed like a home run. The real question, at least on offense, they still have Jay Cutler. So is he going to be able to succeed under John Fox? I want to say yes, because Cutler still got the arm. What he lost, really, was confidence, not to mention support. And to me, he was playing in an offense that didn't work for him, too, under Trestman. But now they get rid of Brandon Marshall. Now, they still have talent, obviously, from an offensive standpoint. And losing Marshall may not be such a bad thing. He's a cancer and really detached himself from the team. They pick up a few notable acquisitions: Eddie Royal, defensive end Ray McDonald, safety intro role. But to me, anybody to help this team make better, especially on defense, you know, bringing in Pernell McPhee, huge pickup. He's going to give the Bears some sort of pass rush, which they didn't have last year. It was a big issue. He played with the Ravens, 27 tackles, 7.5 sacks, and a fumble. He's just 26 years old. So to me, not only a big asset, but a building block they could kind of build around as this team attempts to get better.
Yeah, looking at this number, it's sitting at 7 at BetOnline with the under -145. And that's a little bit surprising. I guess that's not as surprising to me as it should be, you know, with such a heavy number on the under, because, you know, this is a team that's got talent, as I said. They have a legitimate coaching staff now, which is a huge upgrade over Mark Trestman. And Trestman may be a good offensive coordinator for Baltimore, and we talked about him a couple weeks ago on our first show, you know, with the fact that he's not in charge of the defense anymore, and obviously that was a huge problem for him when he was in Chicago. But, you know, Cutler gets a shot at redemption here with a guy who, in Adam Gase, you know, who's very creative offensively. He'll let the quarterback make plays. That's something that Cutler's going to have to like. You know, and I think they're going to get a lot more out of Matt Forte. And, you know, Kadeem Carey is a pretty damn good backup. He had some monster games with Arizona in his college days. So there are pieces here. They've done some good things in the offseason, helping out the defense. And opponents starting field position last year at the 32.8-yard line for the Bears. So, you know, if they get some shorter, if they're able to improve the field position battle, you know, that should inherently improve this defense. I mean, that's one of those things that a lot of people overlook. You know, if you can make a team go 6 or 7 more yards every possession, you know, that's going to make a difference, especially with a new defensive coordinator, you know, some better playmakers back there. I think the Bears are a team on the upswing. I'm just not entirely sold that it happens in 2015.
Well, it's hard to buy in too, right? Because they're switching over to 3-4. You got to find the right nose tackle, outside linebacker to rush the passer. That's, you know, where they go out and get a few pieces. They also, the draft wasn't so bad. I think they get two first rounders in the first two rounds with Kevin White. I think he's got tremendous upside, of course. Eddie Goldman, defensive tackle out of Florida State too. He is definitely a run stuffer type of person, but, you know, they'll want him to play a better role, more vital role, I guess, if there's such a thing. Now, I really think coaching makes the difference in this league. Now, quarterback-driven, I agree. You need your stars. You need a good defense. Is this team going to come out and, you know, win 12 games? Probably not. The defense won't be that dramatically improved over 1 year because, like you said, even when you have coaching, you still need the talent. But I like the schedule, truth be told. It starts off a little shaky early with tough games, Packers, Arizona, Seattle. And even last, you know, the last stretch, 2 out of 3 at Vikings, at Bucks, Lions. But I think there's some winnable games in there. I think this number is set a tad lower than it deserves to be. To me, I'm taking over. Again, just barely. I'm not sold in it. I'm not betting the bank on it. But I think they're going to be vastly improved, and I think they're going to have a shot at the playoffs late in the season.
I think they're going to have a shot at the playoffs as well. I said in my win total write-up, I think this team's a dark horse to make the wild card. And the most fascinating stat that I found about the Bears, and believe me, there were a lot of them. How about this? The Bears were outscored last year by 63 points on field goals alone.
Oh, wow.
They had 12 made field goals. They gave up 33 made field goals. So, you know, I mean, that's something that's probably not going to happen again. 63 points is a significant amount over the course of the season. Give me the Bears over. I like what Fox is going to do. I like that he's not walking into a situation that, you know, is completely barren of talent. I mean, Jay Cutler has his issues, but he's still a proven NFL quarterback, and that's a lot better than what most new head coaches walk into. So I think Fox can get a lot out of this team. 8-8 wouldn't surprise me. I think they can push at 7-9, and, you know, if you've got maybe a hedging possibility in that final game against Detroit, you know, you may be happy to have that if you're sitting on the over at plus money. But, you know, give me Chicago over here because I think that there's talent, and I think they finally have the coaching staff to maximize that talent.
I agree. And the defense can only go up. And, look, this team gave up late in the season, and not even late in the season. You can almost say in the middle of the season. And I think this made this team look a lot worse than they were, especially on offense. So the defensive numbers are definitely credible, but I think they'll be better all around. I'm on the over, too.
Well, look at the Detroit Lions now. Their win total sitting at 8.5, the over plus 110, so the under at minus 140. Their first playoff appearance since 2011 last year, second playoff appearance since 1999. And once again, they were one and done, unfortunately. But, you know, with the Lions here, obviously this is Matt Stafford's team. Defensively, they were outstanding last season, but some big losses.
Huge losses. How about that Sue guy up front? He's pretty good. They also lose Nick Fairley as well. To me, that was the problem with this Detroit team. Their offense was always there. They just always needed a defense to help out. Now they go out and they sign Nagata from Baltimore. They also get Tyron Walker. But they're going to be very versatile up front with those guys because it'll basically be Jason Jones jumping in and they'll rotate. But to me, when I hear a team talking about being versatile up front, that means they don't have a superstar. That means they're just going to try to rotate a lot of people in, and that's going to be tough to overcome. And as much as his offense has talent, obviously Calvin Johnson, one of the best in the league, maybe of all time, Stafford, definitely an NFL caliber quarterback. The offense was 22nd in scoring, 19th overall, but that was under first-year offensive coordinator Joe Lombardi. Stafford should be a little more comfortable in this offense, but you don't know if that'll equate to better because now you have to worry about a defense that you might have to compensate for. And the Detroit Lions also, you have to worry about that offensive line. They're going into the 2015 season with the second youngest projected starting offensive line in the entire NFL, and there will be some growing pains there as well.
Yeah, if you look at this team from a point differential to record standpoint, they actually overachieved by almost two full games last year. Their expected win-loss record 9.2 and 6.8 as opposed to the 11-5 that they had. So right there tells you that there's some regression coming for this team regardless. But then you include the loss of Sue, the loss of Fairley. You know, it's going to hurt their run defense, and their run defense only gave up 3.2 yards per carry last year. You know, so they were able to play a little bit different in coverage in the secondary because they had that nice safety net. They don't have that anymore. And, you know, looking at the schedule this year, they had a pretty easy schedule last season. They only play four playoff teams from this year, but they play at San Diego. They've got to go to London to play Kansas City. They play Philadelphia, St. Louis, and New Orleans. You know, those are five teams that didn't make the playoffs last year, but they're still very legitimate teams. So the schedule takes a step up. They lose some important players. You know, there's some regression in their statistical profile. I mean, this is a team that could very well start the year 0-4 with games at San Diego, at Minnesota. They host Denver, then play at Seattle on Monday night. Then, in fact, they're a home underdog against Arizona in week 5. So this is a team that I think if they start 2-3, they should consider themselves fortunate. And the Lions aren't really the kind of team that you want to be playing catch-up with a win total.
No, and, you know, look, when I talk about the draft and some of the players that I've seen in the draft, it's easy to speculate because you never know how great these guys are going to be. But I like the positions they're grabbing. You know, they grab a guard and Tomlinson in the first overall pick. I'd love to see Amir Abdullah in the NFL, see if he's good as he was, you know, in college because he's a good passing game, fumbles a little too much for my liking, good in the run zone game too. But this team has got nowhere to go for me, nowhere to go. I'm telling you right now, I'm only a little bit higher on them than I am on Washington. I mean, I'm not going to go out and say they're going to have three wins, and that's probably an unfair comparison. But like you said, three of the first four games are on the road. Three out of the last four games are on the road, too. So first and last are part of their schedule is a nightmare. This team, to me, is the worst team in the division. They're going to finish in the cellar.
I think there's a very legitimate chance that that happens. I completely agree with you. And, you know, I said that they're under 8.5 is a good play there. And in looking at what they did last year, this is why there's such a chance for regression. They played eight games that were decided by single digits, and they won six of them. And I really don't expect that to be the case this season. They only turned the ball over 20 times. They won the field position battle. You know, now there's more pressure on Stafford because the defense is going to regress a little bit. I have no hopes for this team whatsoever. I wouldn't be surprised if they do finish last. It was something with a 5-11 type of record. You know, because I think the Bears are improving, and we'll talk about the Vikings here in about 10 minutes or so, but they're a team that's on the upswing as well.
No, and you're right, and that's why maybe it's a matter of just playing in the wrong division. Obviously, this is one of the better divisions in football, and you can win. Look, Detroit, for as bad as they're going to be, in my opinion, they could still play with Minnesota, Chicago, and Green Bay on any given day because this division is so tight and so close, but I just don't see it. I really don't. Outside of Stafford and Calvin Johnson, they need some help. They need some help, and they just don't have it right now from a talent standpoint. And I wouldn't be surprised if this team gives up late in the season once they realize they're going to have a losing year.
Well, normally it's hard for us to go out and say that somebody's going to win the division with relative ease. But in breaking down the NFC North here, it looks like the Green Bay Packers have a very, very smooth road to winning the NFC North. Their win total at 10.5. Over sitting minus 135. We just said we think the Lions are going to regress in a big way. The Bears probably aren't there yet. I think it really should, excuse me, it really shouldn't surprise people what we're going to think about the Minnesota Vikings. But, you know, Green Bay, no team comes into this season with a bigger chip on its shoulder than the Packers.
Oh, I agree. I'm glad you brought that up. That was a point I was going to hit on, too. You know, if they weren't injured near the end of that season, and even if they were, you figure they could have won. But, you know, they think they're poised to win, and they're poised to win right now. General manager Ted Thompson, that guy's brilliant. I mean, when that free agency season started and Randall Cobb and Tyco Brian Beluga, they were both free agents, I thought it was done. I thought they were only going to get one of them. Now, of course, they broke the bank for Cobb. They got Beluga at a discount. But to me, Cobb's huge. I mean, 91 passes last year, 1,200 yards, 12 touchdowns. And he's only 24 years old. So locking him in was a huge thing. And, of course, protecting Aaron Rodgers is a huge thing. His defense only seems to be getting better or at least more prepared to handle the opposition. And, look, three out of the first four draft picks were on the defensive side of the football. So they know what they need to do. I also think they get a steal in round three with Ty Montgomery out of Stanford. So, to me, for as quick as I dismissed Washington and could get rid of Washington, I will be on the side of Green Bay to win this division, which is probably a no-brainer slam dunk, of course, barring injuries.
Yeah, I just don't see anybody else that can challenge them. And you look at how they came out of the NFC Championship game. I mean, they had that game won. They're up 16-0 at half. They're up 19-7 with 3:40 left. You know, all they had to do was catch an onside kick, and they're going to the Super Bowl. And you know, disaster strikes then. And, you know, you have all offseason to think about that kind of thing. And they're going to get a rematch with Seattle in week two. They're going to be a slight home favorite in that game. You know, they're a favorite in most of their games. The only game they're a dog in is at Denver. Not a big surprise there with that one. But, you know, I think this is a very balanced schedule for them. They've got a week seven bye, which is okay. They play back-to-back road games after the bye, you know, but there's nothing that really jumps out to me that would suggest that the Packers are going to struggle too much this season. I think, and looking at this number, I had said under 11 initially in my write-up, but that's because I was going off of the win total at Westgate Superbook. But sitting at 10.5, I think this is an 11-5 or better team. So I'm going to backtrack off the written prediction I had because I got a different number. So it's not like I'm
sure,
you know, completely flip-flopping there. But, you know, the difference between 10.5 and 11 is huge.
I agree completely. And you know, that brings me to another point. First of all, I'm going over. I see this as a 12-win team. But from a betting standpoint, you know, you and I talked about, you know, getting in the game early, so to speak, from a value standpoint to see where coaches are, see what players are coming. You know, you can also get that same value from a betting standpoint. Think about it. You've already talked about this line going from 11 to 10.5, which, like you, I agree, is a huge swing. Well, if you're betting on this market in the NFL and you're betting on win totals, that's why you want to keep an eye on the market. And if you see a move like that, that's your chance to pounce. So to me, another very important thing to bring up during the show.
Well, another thing I like about the Packers, and I think it really gets overshadowed because Aaron Rodgers is so good. Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson are very good. Davante Adams, you know, he's a tremendous wide receiver three who's going to wind up having a big year this year. Is that, you know, it was a mess at the time. But when Aaron Rodgers went down in 2013 and Mike McCarthy had to switch things over and start running the football more, that may have been one of the best things to happen to this organization because, you know, if Rodgers was a broken collarbone, that heals, it's not a prolonged thing, it wasn't a knee or a shoulder, anything like that. And Eddie Lacy, 4.6 yards per carry last year. Packers were 10th in yards per carry, 11th in total yards and rushing touchdowns. So they had to learn how to run the football when Rodgers went down. And to see those improvements carry over to the next season, I mean, this Packers offense is efficient, it's talented, it's deep, it's balanced, and really can't say that about anybody else in this division, and really not that many teams in the NFL as a whole.
No, it adds a new dynamic. It will, I should say, added. They've already done it. But when they set up the run, now you know when you go to face the Packers, it's not a team you go, all right, now we just got to watch for Aaron Rodgers and pass. That's it. You've got to prepare for both, and that makes things very difficult. But to go back to what you said about the chip on the shoulder, do I think they're going to win this division? Yes. But I think if you're making a short list of teams that can win the Super Bowl, the Packers should be right at the top.
I think so as well. I think that's absolutely a good place to finish with them. And, you know, we'll probably give some Super Bowl predictions at the end of next week's show when we finish up the last 8 teams. But, you know, it's certainly something that we'll focus on more once we get to training camp because we're going to know a lot more about these teams, you know, once they're actually out on the field. But, you know, a team we found out a lot about last year is the Minnesota Vikings. And this is no longer a team that's going to sneak up on people. They've got Teddy Bridgewater, you know, probably the best quarterback to come out of last year's draft class so far. Mike Zimmer put together a phenomenal defense with the Vikings. Not a big surprise there. That's something we talked about last year in our preview show with him coming over from the Bengals where he had put together such a great defense. You know, we weren't surprised at all that it carried over. And, you know, I think if there's anybody that can potentially find a way to challenge the Packers, I'm going to say it's the Vikings.
I can't disagree. Look, we talked about coaching make a difference. Zimmer's a perfect example of that. He's literally changed not only the mindset of this team, but really how they approach to playing football. And now they're a defensive-minded, tough group. And Zimmer's got such a presence with his defensive players. He was able to bring, you know, cornerback Terrence Newman and safety Taylor Manners over with him this year via free agency. They also do some veteran moves, bringing Sean Hill to back up Bridgewater in case he gets hurt, which is a big deal. To me, one of the things that not many people are talking about, the Mike Wallace move. They bring in Mike Wallace. He'd obviously be the biggest addition if he's not the cancer that he was in Miami. He's going to be the number one guy. He's a deep threat. He's huge. But he was such a disappointment in Miami. You can't have that on a team that's so young headed in the right direction. And that's where I think Zimmer comes in. I think Zimmer will be able to play that role of, you know, talking about what this team needs and when they need it, like how to keep them focused, I guess, instead of going off the rails when things go bad. And you think Zimmer's a defensive-minded coach? How about, you know, first three picks being defenders, you know, Trey Wayne's cornerback grabs first, and then he follows that up with Eric Kendricks. So, again, they're emphasizing that defense. They know they're headed in the right direction from a defensive standpoint because that doesn't put a lot of pressure on your quarterback to win. They're playing in a division where outside of Green Bay, they can challenge the Green Bay because they can get some winnable games against Detroit and Chicago, and you got to assume at least a split there. And if they can steal one from Green Bay, now we're talking about a team who could compete. What I really, really, really want to see with this team is what they do with Adrian Peterson, because to me, that ultimately will be the difference.
Yeah, that will be a huge difference, although I do like Jerick McKinnon. If McKinnon's able to stay in the lineup, you know, last year he was really hurt by injuries. You know, he was getting regular touches, and the offense was looking a lot better. If you can add Peterson and use McKinnon as more of a change of pace type of guy, you know, not only does that keep him healthier, but it's going to keep AP healthier as well. You know, the Peterson thing is interesting to me just because, you know, I want to see how he handles it. The team has obviously dug their line in the sand and they're not willing to move him, you know, and who can blame them? I mean, he's one of the most talented players in the NFL when he's out there. But, you know, he's going to have to get over it, get past it. He really has no options because he has no leverage in this situation. He's going to have to play for them. Their win total is sitting at 7 over minus 125 at BetOnline. You know, the thing that's interesting for me about the Vikings is that, you know, they're not going to be one of those public perception teams because they don't really have a whole lot of skill players that are, you know, like fantasy football type of guys. You know, so that kind of keeps the public away. And also, they're a really tough, physical, scrappy team. You know, they bring in big guys like Eric Kendricks, Daniel Hunter, TJ Clemmings. You know, they're building in the trenches. They're building guys that want to hit, guys that want to inflict pain and punishment on the opposition. You know, those are teams that tend to not get as much respect as they deserve in the NFL. And I think it's a very dangerous position to take if you're not thinking a whole lot of the Vikings for this year.
Well, and that's why I would love for to see them to, you know, shop Peterson and build this team even better and better, because I think his time is done there, and I think they really have a good core. And I love the fact that you brought up they're not going to be the public team. They're just not sexy. I mean, they could easily win your, you know, 10-6 kind of ball games or your 17-14 kind of ball games. I really like how the schedule sets up, too, with their last game of the season being at Lambeau, which could be a very important game. Who knows how that runs out. But I love how the schedule lines up. I love that they're buying into a defensive-minded set. Mindset, and I really like Teddy Bridgewater. I like what he's done in his first year. I think this team's going to grow. I think they're destined for second. They're going to have to pull away from the Bears late because the Bears, like I said, are going to be vastly improved. But I really like where they're going. I really want to take the over in this, which is going to be tough because that means I'm liking three teams in this division to have pretty decent seasons, which could be difficult.
Yeah, I really like the over here. This is one of my stronger plays with the write-up. You know, they won 7 games last year, went 7-9 with no Adrian Peterson, you know, outside of that first game. And Teddy Bridgewater was really banged up all season long. This is a team that had 20 or fewer points 9 different times last season. They were 2-7 in those 9 games, 6-9 on the road. So you can have your concerns about Bridgewater winning on the road, about this offense producing, but you know, this is going to be a really, really hard team to play against. And you know, when you look at their schedule, when you look at some of the other teams that they have coming in, you know, these are teams that want to use games like Minnesota as a bit of a breather. And teams that do that are going to get beat by this Vikings team. So I like
and
them.
That,
I
and
think
that happens way too
in
much in the NFL. I don't want to step on you. I'm sorry. It just happens a lot.
No, it's a great point to make. I mean, it's something that we talk about all the time during our regular season shows where, you know, you get these situational betting angles where you can pick these teams that are undervalued, the line's off. You know, and I think you're going to get quite a few of those with the Vikings. I think not only is this an 8-8 team, I think this could be a team that posts a double-digit spread record.
Wow, that's a very bold projection or prediction, but I like it. I think the Vikings are going to be good this year.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, you and I harp on the trenches on these shows because, you know, everyone knows about the skill players. Everyone knows about the fantasy football players. But, you know, games really are won in the trenches. I mean, if your quarterback doesn't have time to throw, then you're probably not going to score points. You know, if you don't have a pass rush and the other team's quarterback can stand upright and be comfortable and make all the throws he wants, you're not going to win games. And the Vikings are very strong in the trenches. They're young. They're hungry. They've got a coach that, you know, they want to fight for. You got a guy like Norv Turner, who's going to be in his second year with Bridgewater. Got to figure the offense improves with him. There are a lot of things to like about this Vikings team, and you know, I just hope it comes to fruition so that we sound smart.
Well, that's the best part about doing early shows is that we'll have plenty more to come and plenty more predictions along the way.
Absolutely. Well, we went over 8 teams here today. A lot of good stuff, a lot of analysis. We'll go over 8 more next Tuesday. Finish up the league. We've now gone through 24 of the 32 teams. I'll talk about the NFC South and the NFC West next week. I'm sure we'll have some very hot takes on the NFC West because I know that last year you beat up on the San Francisco 49ers quite a bit and you were validated for your opinion. So definitely looking forward to that one. Any final thoughts from you?
I'm looking forward to the season. I can't wait, and I'm looking forward to the 49er fans who want to talk football as well.
Well, I'm looking forward to tomorrow's Betting the Buckets. So, you know, definitely make sure that you're keeping your eyes and ears out for that one. You can hear my MLB betting podcast, The Bettor's Box, once again on Thursday. You know, the nice thing about that show is it's got a little bit of a shelf life because I look at things I'm concerned with over the next couple of days, talk about some sabermetric concepts. It's not all about the games that night. So, you know, if you miss it on a Monday or a Thursday, there's still plenty of time to listen. Cole, any teasers for betting the buckets tomorrow you want to tell us about?
Oh, yeah. Can't wait. I'll be breaking down Cleveland, Atlanta. Plus, I'll recap the game one from tonight. And we'll talk if I'll talk about future betting if there's any value left with only four teams left in the season. And, of course, look at the teams who I think can make it to the NBA Finals.
I like it. I like it. Well, make sure that you tune in for that. But that'll do it for us here on the Gridiron Gambling Report. For Cole Ryan, I'm Adam Burke. Hope you enjoyed the show, everybody. And we'll talk to you again next week.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.